That, of course, was the theme to The Honeymooners, which for my money is probably the most elegant piece of music that ever graced a television program. It's fitting music, I think, to serve as an introduction to our next guest, Barbara Dixon, who is the director of the Museum of Television and Radio right here in Los Angeles, California. I know many of you listening visit Los Angeles regularly, and perhaps some of you are from there. Most people I know don't know about this museum, and I think it's really a darn shame. When I was in Los Angeles earlier this month, I had a chance to once again visit it. I'm as impressed as I always have been. So I thought we would do well to ask Barbara Dixon, the director of the museum, to tell us a bit about this wonderful facility. Barbara, just how large is your collection?
We have 125,000 programs in the collection to date and growing by the minute.
Wow. How does that break down in terms of radio versus television versus commercials?
Well, it's pretty close between television and radio. We have about 55,000 television programs and about 45,000 radio programs and 25,000 commercials and ads.
Now, I understand that, that it was William Paley of CBS that first got the ball rolling for your museums?
That's correct. There is a story which I like to tell because I think it goes sort of to the heart of the museum about Bill Paley, and I hope it's true. Allegedly, before the museum existed, he turned to one of his assistants one day in the early days of CBS News. And at that time, as you remember, Edward R. Murrow was really the golden spot in the CBS roster at the time.
Sure.
And he turned to his young aide and said, "So where are we storing the Edward R. Murrow shows?" And the aide said, "Excuse me?" And he said, "Well, the shows, the Edward R. Murrow shows, where do we archive them?" And the assistant looked befuddled and finally turned to his boss and said, "Mr. Paley, well, I don't know what you're talking about." And Paley got a little bit excised at this point and said, "Well, I don't know how much clearer I can make it. Where are we keeping these wonderful, memorable broadcasts?" And the young aide had to turn to Bill Paley and say, "Well, I'm sorry, sir. Tape is so expensive these days. We tape over them. We don't keep them at all." And from that moment on, Bill Paley was so appalled that none of these absolutely historic broadcasts had been archived by CBS that he began the idea of creating the Museum of Television and Radio to archive television excellence just like those early Edward R. Murrow shows.
Edward R. Murrow was in the 1950s, so I guess Paley knew, like, probably, I guess, late 50s, early 60s, there was a problem.
I think so, and it took a little time to get us up and running, but we were conceived, and in the original building in New York was built in the 70s, but he, from the beginning, I think, understood an obligation to share the excellence in television with the general public, and therefore really has been the mainstay behind the original conception for the museum.
Yeah. Well, I don't think that, you know, you're nearly as well-known as you should be, so maybe you could just explain to our listening audience how this works. You know, the public, it's open to the public like any museum, and what happens when a member visits?
It is open to the public. We're a little bit different from a normal museum because if you go into an art museum, you're going to see an exhibition of paintings hanging on the wall, and we are more about the visual medium as opposed to coming in and seeing a physical presence of a painting or a sculpture. So our museum has a variety of things that you can do when you visit. You can come in and participate in our theater by looking at our screening series that we might be running at the time. Right now, for example, we're running a screening series called Gen X, which goes back to the television shows that were seen on the air in the 70s. So from the Brady Bunch to Charlie's Angels, it goes back and looks at some of those early television shows from the 70s, part of that Gen X generation's favorite television shows. So you can have an opportunity either to sit in the theater and look at the screening series, or you can go into the library, which in the Los Angeles Museum is on our second floor. We're open to the public. There's no charge of admission to either the screening series or to use the library. You come up to our second floor library, and you go into our little computers, and individuals can sit down and look at our collection. And if you know what you want, you can simply call it up by entering it into the computer. If you don't know what you want, we have a couple of windows that might make suggestions to you in terms of the most popular programs that the average person comes in and asks to see. Once you identify what you want to see, you go to a viewing console, and if there's just one of you, you can sit by yourself, or we have lots of families that come in and see programs together, so we can have as many as four of you sitting in a console watching programming all together as a family activity. And you can watch everything from the early shows like I Love Lucy to some of the more contemporary shows like Friends.
I've done this myself, and it certainly is it's a very enjoyable thing you can do in some of your favorite shows. I think we all have favorite shows from when we're young.
Absolutely.
And I know that I was able to see some things in there, like That Was the Week That Was, mm-hmm. from the early 60s, the Jack Parr, Steve Allen.
Absolutely.
And I guess you just got the gamut covered.
We do. We have everything from entertainment programming to news coverage to some of our most historic events like Apollo 11. It's really spectacular in terms of the breadth of both entertainment and public affairs programming that the museum has.
We have a very web-savvy audience out there. We should mention your website, I think, probably more than once. Where can people go for more information?
www.mtr.org.
Okay. And, of course, we're a college and community station up here in Davis, and a lot of communication majors may be listening, and this is a heck of a resource, I think, for them. How might they take advantage of what you have to offer?
Well, we think we're a great resource for anyone involved in television, both from students and communications to just fans to actual writers to costume directors. Just to give you an example of the kind of possible uses you might have of looking at our collection, we recently had Tom Green and Jimmy Kimmel in our library researching great talk shows and variety shows as part of research they were doing for their new talk show. We frequently have actors in here looking at previous episodes of things that they think might inspire them for future roles or current roles that they're undertaking. We're a great resource for students that want to study the medium.
So if we see some prominent comics recycling some old material, we might know where
they
got it.
I know, absolutely.
Well, when I was in Los Angeles last time, we were involved with a commemoration of Robert Kennedy's unfortunate assassination, mm-hmm. 35 years ago. I had a couple of questions about things as they'd happen, and we were able to go over to the museum and get contemporaneous coverage that answered the questions, and that was just was really an amazing resource.
Well, that's a wonderful thing to hear, and that's exactly what we want the public out there to know, that they can come and participate and hopefully use the museum in exactly the same way that you did.
Talk a bit about radio. One time I was there, and in the listening room, you had a radio broadcast of Orson Welles talking to H.G. Wells, of course.
Yes.
And, of course, Welles was famous for his dramatization on the Mercury Theater of Welles's novel. And this is something you don't find just anywhere.
Well, I think that's right. We have a wonderful radio listening room in both museums in Los Angeles and in New York. People can come in and listen to historic radio broadcasts. We also have in both museums a radio studio, so we frequently have radio programs that broadcast live from the museum, which is also great. People who come into the museum frequently can come in and sit and listen.
You mentioned the most popular broadcasts. What are some examples of things that people just consistently want to come in and listen to?
Well, I have to say, in terms of the television programs, it's always I Love Lucy.
Really?
Without exception, our most popular still is I Love Lucy.
That's interesting. The first and still maybe the greatest situation comedy that TV's ever seen.
I think that's exactly true.
Any others?
If you come in, you can call up a list of the most popular programs on there, and they're predictable. The Honeymooners is also popular.
Sure.
It tends to be comedy.
And you do have, of course, The War of the Worlds, if someone wanted to hear that.
We certainly do.
And I understand from your literature, you've got even like some really rare broadcasts of what would be considered rare. I mean, things you couldn't get just anywhere, like FDR's Fireside Chats. And
yes, that's correct. And we have some actually in the television collection, we have some things that have actually never seen the air before, have never been actually broadcast. So you can come into the library and see there was, for example, an NBC biography that has never been aired before. We have some never-seen programs from I Love Lucy that were actually never aired. So it's kind of fun to come and see things that actually never made it to be broadcast. And we're particularly proud of the fact that we have our wonderful curators who spend a lot of time trying to track down missing broadcasts. And several years ago, we were able to find the one missing episode of The Honeymooners, and that was something that had been missing for a long time, and they were able to research it and get out there and manage to get their hands on it. One of the original Honeymooner episodes that just got lost.
Jackie Gleason very cleverly kept numerous copies for later in life that I guess he sold for quite a handsome...
Yes, he did. We have recently been able to find the second half of the first television broadcast of 12 Angry Men. Before that time, we had the first episode of that, but the second episode had been lost for many, many years after its original broadcast, and we were able to find that second episode of 12 Angry Men. We also found the original radio broadcast coverage of the Lindbergh baby kidnapping trial,
wow.
which had been missing since its original airing many, many, many years ago.
So you're constantly on the search for...
Constantly on the search.
And you're a nonprofit organization.
We're a nonprofit organization.
So we can feel free to plug you at limitlessly on our non-commercial station.
Well, we absolutely appreciate that.
People, you can also, I guess, have some other features that even above and beyond what are available to the general public.
Well, I think one of the most interesting things about the museum is that one of the functions that we do is we provide interpretation of the collection, and we do that through our screening series and through our public seminars. We have wonderful seminars at both museums in Los Angeles and New York, and these seminars can be on current television shows such as Alias or Six Feet Under. They can be reunion shows. We had one recently on with the cast and the producer of Laugh-In, mm-hmm. with all the original actors on stage with us. We're having a reunion show this fall with Get Smart, with Don Adams and Barbara Feldon. We go in the range mm-hmm. from dealing with television shows and entertainment to public affairs programming as well. And we had a whole series of very interesting seminars right after September 11th, which dealt with the coverage, both broadcast coverage and the response of the creative community to September 11th. So that part of the programming that we do here is, I think, wonderful for the general public to be able to interpret the collection that we have.
Yeah, I think any budding journalists would certainly want to go back and look at things like, you know, the 20th century series done in the 60s with Walter Cronkite mm-hmm. or the original biography with Mike Wallace, which I still remember fondly.
Absolutely.
Well, Barbara Dixon from the Museum of Television and Radio, thanks so much.
Thanks so much, Doug.
All right, that does it for this week's show. Our thanks once again to Barbara Dixon of the Museum of Television and Radio, which is located, by the way, at 465 North Beverly Drive in Beverly Hills, if you're down there in the near future. And again, their website is www.mtr.org. And thanks again to Dr. Whitney Lehman for coming back to talk a little bit about Michael Pollan's wonderful book, The Botany of Desire. We will see you again next week at 5 o'clock on Thursday, as always. This is Radio Parallax. You're listening to KDVS 90.3 FM. Oh, and by the way, I'm Douglas Everett. This program was produced by Edward McMillan. Stay tuned now for Todd Urich's eclectic musical selections for your listening pleasure.